I'm Mark Binder. I'm a writer and a storyteller. I was talking to a friend who said that I should write a humorous story about the coronavirus. As much as I would love to, it's a little early for that. But I remembered something that I wrote about a decade ago called The Chicken Soup Bucket Brigade. I thought you would enjoy it. First off, thanks for listening. As I record this, our world is deep in the clutches of a viral pandemic. We're frightened and isolated from each other. This will pass, but for now we seek solace and comfort and entertainment. It's an excerpt from a book called The Council of Wise Women, which is either the fourth or the fifth book in my Life in Helm series, overlapping with The Brothers Schlemiel and The Misadventures of Rabbi Kibitz and Mrs. Chaipul. Although The Council of Wise Women was serialized briefly via email, this book isn't published yet. If you're an agent or a publisher, give me a call. Anyway, it tells the story of Rachel Cohen, her mother, and the women of Helm. Men, of course, have their moments, but these are often quick and overblown. The part I want to share with you begins near the end of chapter 24. This is what you need to know about our story so far. Helm is a village of fools, or so they often seem to the outside world. Bella Schimmel is a cheesemaker and runs a goat farm. Mrs. Chaipul is a caterer, midwife, wife of Rabbi Kibitz, he kept his own name, and the leader of the Council of Wise Women. The Council of Wise Women meets in a very cozy cave beneath the village ritual bath, which is called a mikveh. Eleanor Stein is the baker's wife. Shoshana Cantor is the merchant's wife. While their society defines them as wives, these women are, of course, much more than their relationships with their husbands. Rachel Cohen is the smartest girl in the world. She has also learned the recipe for magical chicken soup from the recently departed Oma Levitsky. Smyrna is the next town over to Helm. There are only two roads to Helm, the Smyrna Road and the Great Circular Road, which goes into the Black Forest, but nobody knows where it leads to. Our story begins as Bella Schimmel and her ox Sevastopol try to deliver some goat's milk to the cheesemonger in Smyrna. Bella knocked again at the door. "Hello, Mr. Leiter? Mrs. Leiter? Are you all right?" There was no sign on the door, no notice in the window, and no sound from the house. It was very strange. That was the moment that Bella noticed that the streets of Smyrna were empty and that the only other creature in sight was Sevastopol, her ox, who was nibbling on a bit of thistle growing from a crack in a wall. It was one of the eeriest sensations she'd ever had. Bella didn't know what to do. She couldn't go back to Helm. Her milk would sour. She hammered on the door. An upstairs window shot open. "Go away," came a voice. "Mr. Leiter?" Bella asked. "Go away." Bella could just see the tip of Mr. Leiter's long and skinny nose peeking out through the open window. "Mr. Leiter, it's Bella Schimmel. Is everything all right?" "No, we're sick." There were sounds of coughing. "Who's sick? Can I get you something?" "Everyone is sick." "Your wife is sick as well?" Bella said. "I'm so sorry. Perhaps I could get you some soup." "No," the old man stammered. "Everyone in Smyrna is sick. Go away. Go away." The window slammed. Bella's eyes widened. Everyone in Smyrna was sick? The streets were empty and quiet. "Come, Sevastopol." Bella clucked her tongue at the ox. "We'd better go." Chapter 25. The Cold. "They have a cold?" Shoshana Cantor asked. It was difficult for her to keep the sarcasm from her voice. "They all have a cold? The entire town has a cold?" Sarah Cohen shrugged her shoulders. Bella was almost hysterical, and you know how high-strung she can be. The Schimmel sisters were famous for the extremes of their behavior. Bella was prone to hysterics, and though she was finally married, you really didn't want her lingering around your husband. Bertha was solid, with a face like a rock. An 11-year-old Penina, everyone still thought of her as the baby. All of which is a long way to say that if Bella Schimmel was upset, it was nearly impossible to say whether it was because a problem was big or inconsequential. But a cold, Shoshana Cantor repeated. She had her feet up on an embroidered Ottoman footstool. The women were gathered together in the council cave. A small fire was burning beneath the chimney hole. Outside, the first snow of the year was beginning to flurry down. Inside, it was warm and cozy. "When my husband has a cold, I have to do all my work and all his work," said Eleanor Stein. "I have to prepare all the dough, fire up the ovens, shape the loaves, wait around for them to rise." "Okay, okay," Hannah Meyer interrupted. "We've all baked bread. You don't have to give us all the details." "One loaf, two loaves you've baked," Eleanor Stein said, "but not 200. 200 loaves?" Shoshana Cantor repeated. She began calculating the price of the baked bread in comparison to the cost of the flour that she knew her husband provided the Steins. "Sometimes more, sometimes less," Eleanor said. "It depends on the day." "A day?" Shoshana Cantor was surprised. There were only about 80 families in Helm. How much bread could anyone eat? "So you sell the bread to the people of Smyrna?" "Naturally," Eleanor said. "Whenever I go to the market for my shopping, I take a cartload to Grossinger's Grocery. They buy the bread from me and sell it to the Smyrnans." "Really?" Shoshana leaned forward as she sipped her tea. "How much do you get wholesale?" "Enough," Chana Chaipul said, waving her hands to dispel the foul spirits. "No business. Let the men talk about money and trade. We are here to figure out what to do for the people of Smyrna." Deborah Schicker looked thoughtful. "We could send them handkerchiefs." "Why would we send them handkerchiefs?" Rebecca Schlemiel asked. "So they can blow their noses," Deborah Schicker said. "We could sell them the handkerchiefs," said Shoshana Cantor. "Enough with the business," Chana said. "This is about a mission of mercy, not a mission to make money." "There's no reason not to combine them both," Shoshana said glumly. "What else?" Chana asked. Sarah Cohen raised her hand. "What are you doing?" Hannah Meyer said. Sarah glanced at the Balanit HaMikvah. "I'm raising my hand." "I can see that," Hannah said. "Why are you raising your hand?" "My daughter says that Rabbi Abrams has the children raise their hands when they want to be called on. She says he does it to maintain order." Eleanor Stein snorted a bit of tea out her nose. "Are you crazy? Order? Here?" All the other women were giggling. The idea of raising your hand before butting in was patently absurd. "Sweetheart," Hannah said, putting a gentle finger on Sarah's wrist, "talking in the council chambers is a bit like making a stew. If you've got an idea, throw it into the pot. We'll stir it around for a while, let it cook, let it simmer, let it blend. Then, when all the ingredients are tender, we'll serve the stew." "You're making me hungry," Shoshana Cantor said. Hannah Meyer rolled her eyes. "You're always hungry." "All right," Sarah Cohen said, gathering her courage. "All right. What are the men doing?" "What do you mean?" Chana Chaipul asked. "What do our husbands want to do? My husband says it's not our problem. He says that he has enough to do here in Helm without worrying about Smyrna."
"My husband says the same thing," Deborah Schicker agreed.
"Isaac thinks we should quarantine the whole town," Shoshana Cantor said. "He'll send his wagons around instead of through." Chana Chaipul leapt to her feet. "Wait a minute here. What are you doing?"
"Talking," Deborah said. Reaching for a piece of mandel bread, Shoshana said, feeling guilty.
"No, this is not about the men," Chana said. "This is about the women. What do we want to do? The men of Helm are useless."
There was a moment of quiet and general agreement on this subject.
"I wouldn't want to get rid of them, though," Hannah Meyer said. "Not all the time, anyway."
"That's not the point," Chana Chaipul said. "The point is that in these circumstances, the men are not helping."
"It's just a cold," Shoshana said. "Give them a week of rest and they'll be back on their feet."
"No," Chana said. "Maybe it's just a cold, or maybe it's influenza." There were a few gasps, and then Sarah Cohen asked, "What's influenza?"
"It's a cold," Shoshana said. "That you can die from," Chana said. "It spreads like crazy. Everybody gets sick. They can't eat. They can't drink. And what they can eat and drink, they can't keep down or can't keep in."
No need to get all graphic in your descriptions, Chaya Levitsky said. Some of us would like to eat mandel bread without feeling nauseous.
Chana waved her hand. Believe me, I haven't even begun to get into the revolting descriptions. I've treated the influenza. It spreads like crazy. I've seen the bed sores and smelled the...
Are you trying to make me sick to my stomach? Chaya Levitsky said.
No, Chana said. I'm just trying to explain that if we don't do something, then people in Smyrna could die. Men, women, and children.
The council fell silent. At last, Eleanor Stein said,
Look, I know we're not supposed to talk about the men right now, but my husband says that the reason we shouldn't do anything is because of the danger of contagion. If we try to help, we could all get sick.
There were some nods and grumbled agreements.
Then Chana spoke. What kind of a world do you want to live in? One where we are all safe, but our neighbors are all dead? We have to help each other. Otherwise, we're no better than the animals. And even animals will help a sick friend.
Again, there were nods and grumbled agreements.
If my mother-in-law were alive, Chaya Levitsky said, we could send them some soup.
Once again, there were nods and grumbled agreements.
Yes!
Sarah Cohen put up her hand, realized what she'd done, pulled it down and blurted, The soup! We'll make them the soup!
Look, Sarah, Chana Haipul said, Chicken soup is a wonderful thing, and I think we should consider it. But Oma Levitsky is long dead. May she rest in peace.
Oma Levitsky's soup was almost magical. Everyone knew it. Everyone agreed. Everyone echoed, May she rest in peace.
My daughter has been making the soup, Sarah Cohen said.
Your daughter, Shoshana Cantor said. Your daughter this, your daughter that, your daughter is going to school, your daughter is conferring with the governor, your daughter is making the soup. Enough with your daughter.
The cave got very quiet, except for the crackling of the fire. At last, Sarah said, very slowly and through gritted teeth,
Rachel has been making the soup since Oma passed away.
It's not the same soup, Shoshana Cantor said dismissively.
Of course it's not, Sarah shot back. It's her soup now.
Oh, so now she's a soup maker as well as a genius? Has she found a husband yet?
She's not even 10 years old.
Enough of this, Chana Haipul shouted. Heads jerked around.
Sarah, has Rachel really been keeping Oma's soup alive?
I think so, Sarah said. She stirs it every day. She tends it, talking to it like it's a young child. And sometimes, when she thinks I'm not looking, she kisses it.
Your crazy daughter is in love with some soup, Shoshana said. No wonder she doesn't have a husband.
Sarah jumped up. At least my crazy daughter's got a brain.
Don't you insult my daughter.
Will you two stop, Hannah Meyer said. Fight about your families later. We have to save Smyrna. So far, we've got two ideas. Send them handkerchiefs and send them soup. What else?
Deborah Schicker raised her hand tentatively.
What already? Hannah Meyer said. Stop with the raising of hands.
Tuck them into beds, Deborah whispered. Kiss their foreheads. Read them stories.
Okay, Hannah said. Now we're up to five ideas. Let's keep going.
Chapter 26, The Chicken Soup Bucket Brigade. It was the first chicken soup bucket brigade in the history of the world. Every villager from Helm, man, woman, and child, helped out, with the exception of a few infants. Oh, and Tante Confer, who, upon realizing that she had inherited the position as the oldest Helmaner from Oma Levitsky, had taken to her bed and hadn't risen since. Anyway, a long, sparse line snaked from the kitchen of the Cohen house through Helm's round village square, between east and west hills, and up the Smyrna road, through the Schwarzwald to the center of Smyrna, where the buckets of soup were emptied into a cook pot supervised by Mrs. Haipul to warm up before being dispatched to every home in Smyrna in bowls covered with new, clean handkerchiefs. Then the bucket was sent back to Helm, where it paused by a well, was refilled with water, and was returned to Oma Levitsky's magical soup pot. The process was complicated, the work was hard, and the challenge was great.
No one had to schlep anything very far, but it wasn't as simple and quick as passing water to put out a fire. You had to collect your bucket from the person behind you, and then walk it carefully without spilling onto the next person up the chain. Then, if you were lucky, the empty bucket was ready and waiting to be returned to Helm. If not, you had to hustle back for the next load on its way to Smyrna. Fortunately, Rabbi Kibitz had abandoned all his objections to the project when Mrs. Heipel had explained that she was perfectly willing to shut down her restaurant and leave Helm forever if he didn't agree to help out. Once the rabbi conceded, he convinced the rest of the elders, which is to say the rest of the prominent men in the village, that it was in their best interest to help as well. He conferred with Rabbi Johann Abrams, and they developed a quick and easy method for koshering the milk buckets from the Schimmel's farm. Reb Cantor hitched his horses and began to ride through the countryside collecting chickens and onions and garlic and mushrooms and anything else he could find for the soup's pot. While the Helm contingent was getting organized, Mrs. Heipel took the first buckets to Smyrna. Reb Schicker, the accountant and town drunk, insisted that he come with her, and once her improvised kitchen was established in the grand plaza in the middle of Smyrna, she learned his reason. Some of the residents of Smyrna had locked their doors before they had gone to bed, and Reb Schicker, as it turned out, was a natural-born locksmith. He unlocked the doors and opened them for Mrs. Heipel to carry in the warm broth. When they had a moment to catch their breaths, Reb Schicker confided to Mrs. Heipel that long ago he had been a thief. He had broken into houses in fine cities like Minsk and Smolensk and taken anything and everything that he could carry. Then, when he had met his wife, he had given up the life of crime and since devoted himself to paying back all the people from whom he had stolen. Mrs. Heipel listened to his story somberly and told him that if he had repaid the money, then he had surely fulfilled his obligation, because without his skills, many families in Smyrna would have had homes with broken windows or doors. From dawn until dusk, and all through the night, the buckets were passed from man, to woman, to child, to woman, and so on, up and down the road between Smyrna and Helm. Fortunately, the moon was full, or else no one would have dared to venture into the Black Forest after dark. As it was, in the middle of the night, the children were sent home, and schleps for the adults got longer and longer. For her part, Rachel Cohen kept adding ingredients and stirring the soup in Oma's pot. Every time some well-meaning woman offered her advice, Rachel did her best to smile and consider, but shooed the helpful lady out of the house before following the recipe for the soup that Oma had taught her. 3 hours before dawn, when her mother came in with a bucket full of water and a sack of freshly chopped leeks, she found Rachel standing over the pot, fast asleep. "You have to go to bed, Rachel," Sarah said. "I can't, Mama. I'm the only one who knows how to make the soup." "Won't the pot take care of itself?" "I don't know, Mama. I'll be fine. If Yaakov can stay awake, then so can I." "Yaakov went to bed an hour ago. Oma Levitsky's soup was so strong and powerful that it can rest for a moment or two while you rest." "I'm fine, Mama. I have to be. After all, I have to taste the soup, so I should be healthy enough." "At least have some bread," Sarah insisted. Rachel agreed, but when her mother picked up the next full bucket and brought it outside to pass to her husband, who would then pass it up the chain, she set the crust down and began to sob. The truth was that the soup in the pot was not Oma Levitsky's soup, not anymore. Sometime after the first 10 buckets had been sent to Smyrna, Rachel had looked in the pot and realized that she had scooped out the last drop and that the pot was boiling itself dry. "Where is that water?" she shrieked, and was relieved that Adam Schlemiel had arrived at that moment with the first bucket on its way back. "It's right here," he said. Fortunately, he had filled the bucket with water. "Get me more," Rachel yelled as she snatched it out of Adam's hand. Then she ran inside and dumped the bucket into the pot, where it hissed and quickly started to boil. "Get me more." The poor boy shook his head at the rudeness, but went back to his task. Soon the pot was full to the top with boiling water and fresh ingredients. Rachel was stirring and blowing and tasting and kissing the broth. It was delicious. It was warm. It was thick.
But it wasn't Oma Levitsky's. Now she was more careful. She made sure that the cauldron was never emptied. She sent Adam back and forth to the well 3 times for every bucket that went out. She kept Reb Cantor busy filling her order for meat and bones and vegetables. The buckets kept moving back and forth from Chelm to Smyrna. The bowls of soup were hurried from Mrs. Heipel's reheating to the sick townsfolk. Rachel was terrified that it was all a waste of effort. She was petrified that because of her inattention, because of her mistake, the people of Smyrna would not get well. She didn't dare tell anyone, though. If they knew, they would hate her. They would say that she had lied on purpose. They would say that she was just trying to show off. That was what Gittel Cantor always said. Rachel didn't mean to be smart or to be the one that Oma entrusted with the soup and the soup's pot. And the fact that the pot had gone dry was proof enough that she shouldn't have been trusted. Keep soup in the pot. That, if nothing else, was the main point that Oma had emphasized, that the pot should never be empty. The soup was like a sourdough starter that had been passed down from generation to generation, until Rachel Cohen had lost her focus, and now, who knew? Rachel stared into the pot. It was getting low again. She left her post long enough to rush to the door. "More water," she shouted. "More chickens." Adam Schlemiel was standing there, right outside her door as she yelled in his face. "The well is empty," he said. "There's no more water."
"What?"
Rachel yelped. Reb Cantor was standing beside Adam. "There are no more chickens either."
"What?"
Rachel gasped. "No chickens in the whole village," the merchant said. "No onions, mushrooms, or garlic. No carrots. We've used everything."
"But the soup," Rachel said. "There's only a bucketful left."
"We'll send it to Smyrna," said Reb Cantor. "We'll bring water back from Smyrna and chickens and everything else."
"It will take too long," Rachel said. "The pot will be dry. It can't be empty. Oma told me."
Rachel burst into tears and collapsed on the ground. "Go get her mother," Reb Cantor ordered. Adam Schlemiel took off like a shot. Huffing and grunting, Reb Cantor bent down, picked up the sobbing youngster and brought her into the house. By the time he'd crossed the threshold, the 10-year-old girl was asleep in his arms. He lay her in her bed and tucked her in. On his way back out of the house, he peered into the pot. There wasn't much left. He gave it a stir and sighed. Sarah Cohen and Doodle burst into the house.
"Where is she?" Sarah said.
Reb Cantor nodded his head toward Rachel's bedroom. Her mother rushed off to her daughter's side. "I guess I have to go to Smyrna now," Reb Cantor grumbled.
"No," Doodle said, "it's done. Every house in Smyrna has gotten soup. The villagers are on their way back home."
"Really?" Reb Cantor's face brightened. "Did it work?"
"I don't know," Doodle said. "Mrs. Heipel and some of the other ladies are staying in Smyrna to check up on people."
"We did our best, didn't we, Doodle?" Reb Cantor asked. The poor merchant was exhausted himself. He had been rushing about without stopping for food or drink.
"Yes, we did," Doodle said. "Go home. I'll stir the soup."
Reb Cantor handed the young boy the spoon and tottered off for his rest. After a time, Sarah Cohen passed through the kitchen and patted Doodle on the shoulder. She greeted her husband as he returned home. For 24 hours, the villagers of Chelm slept, except for one. Doodle stood at his post, stirring the dregs of the soup. When he heard a noise from Rachel's room, he stopped long enough to fill a small bowl, which he brought into her room and set beside her bed. A short time later, Rachel emerged. Her face was shining, and her eyes were bright.
"I didn't hear the rooster," she said.
Doodle shrugged. "All the chickens are dead."
"Did you make that soup?" she asked. "It was pretty good."
Doodle shook his head.
"I just stirred it. It's your soup."
"Yes," Rachel agreed. "It's my soup. Have you heard anything from Smyrna?" Again, the boy shook his head.
"No, nothing."
Rachel peered into the pot. "Can you see if there's more water in the well?"
"Of course,"
Doodle agreed. He returned shortly with a full bucket. Rachel was so pleased that she gave him a kiss on the cheek. She was resolved that the pot would never boil dry again.
By late in the afternoon, word had finally arrived back from Smyrna. It was good news. The townsfolk were recovering. Their fevers had broken. They were eating and moving about. Many were out of bed already. The ones who weren't were expected to do fine. Only two people had died, ancient Rabbi Sarnoff and Mrs. Leiter, the wife of the cheesemonger. In a town the size of Smyrna, with an epidemic of influenza that large, only two deaths was, in Mrs. Heipel's estimation, a miracle. The sad news, however, hit Rachel hard. She had met Rabbi Sarnoff and had respected his wisdom and knowledge and kindness. She insisted on traveling with Mrs. Heipel to Smyrna for the funeral. As they walked along, Rachel told Mrs. Heipel how the pot had been emptied and that the soup she had served wasn't really Oma Levitsky's. She said through her tears that it was her fault that Rabbi Sarnoff and Mrs. Leiter had died. "Nonsense," Mrs. Heipel snorted. "Sarnoff was old, and poor Agnes Leiter was always sick. It was their time. Because of you, everyone else lived." Rachel tried hard to believe her, but wasn't sure. "One thing," Mrs. Heipel warned. "The Smyrnans don't remember what happened. All they know is that one day they were sick, and a few days later they were better. They don't remember us coming and feeding them. They're wondering about all the new handkerchiefs, but they're calling that a miracle." "Didn't you tell them the truth?" Rachel asked. Mrs. Heipel shook her head. "No, why would I?" "To get the credit," Rachel said. "There is no credit in taking care of your neighbor. Besides, if I had told them, then they would just have laughed in disbelief. They think that we of Chelm are idiots. It would drive them crazy to believe that we had anything to do with their recovery. Better to let them think that the handkerchiefs came from heaven." Rachel considered this for a moment. "They think that we Chelmer are fools, but that Smyrna's sneezes have a divine blessing?" Mrs. Heipel smiled. "What can I say, child? People are people. When you look around Smyrna, I want you to take notice of all the people that you and your soup kept alive." "I didn't do it by myself," Rachel insisted. "No," Mrs. Heipel said. "And that you tell me so just now lets me know that you are going to be just fine." She took the young girl's hand, and together they made their way to the great synagogue in Smyrna to pay their last regards to the famous Rabbi Sarnoff. Next chapter, 27, An Icy Wind. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this excerpt from The Council of Wise Women. If you'd like more of my Life in Chelm books, the Council hasn't been published yet. The most recent is The Misadventures of Rabbi Kibitz and Mrs. Heipel. It's a romance about the two oldest villagers. It's funny and poignant. Facts and Fiction magazine called it great fun and full of humor. It's available as an audiobook on Audible, Google Play, and iBooks, and in print and ebook everywhere. I also highly recommend The Brothers Schlemiel. It's the story of the twins, Abraham and Adam Schlemiel, from the day they were born until they finally part ways many years later. The Brothers Schlemiel is available on Amazon, iBooks, Google Play Books, and for Kobo. The Brothers Schlemiel was actually the first novel serialized via email. We've recently brought that back for a serialization, which you can try for free. Go to markbinder.com/brothers to sign up. Finally, with Passover coming and Hanukkah way off in the distance, consider reading Matzah Mishugas and A Hanukkah Present, which are again available everywhere fine digital books and audio are sold. Thank you so very much for your time. It's been a pleasure sharing my stories with you. I'm Mark Binder, and I wish you an excellent day. Life in Chelm, a series of books written and performed by Mark Binder. This audio recording is written and performed by Mark Binder. Copyright 2020, all rights reserved.